Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here. We have a lot of, let's say, bills that are scheduled for work session today. I do want to go through and just call out on one of them, Senate Bill 409. It is not going to be taken up today. Senate Bill 409 will be reposted for this coming Monday, which is April 20th. And so technically it's being reposted. We would some would say carried over, but we can't carry over because we're meeting tomorrow. But it will be reposted. So that one's off till 4:20 next week. So with that, I think we're going to go ahead and start with our public hearing. And I want to grab one more thing here. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on Senate Bill 945. Jeff?
Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 945 comes to us from Senator Steiner Hayward and Representative Smith Warner. The bill creates the crime of endangering a minor by allowing access to a firearm. It classifies the crime as a Class A misdemeanor, which is punishable by 1 year's imprisonment, a $6,250 fine, or both. The bill provides exemptions to the crime and prohibits the possession of a firearm by a person convicted under this section, and also creates process for relief from the prohibition. The bill prohibits a transfer of a firearm to a person convicted under this section for 5 years after the conviction. It requires the permission of a minor's parent or guardian for a temporary transfer of a firearm to a minor. The bill requires a gun dealer to post notice concerning the obligations to prevent minors from accessing firearms without the consent of the owner or a minor's parent or guardian. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. We have no amendments.
All right. Thank you. So I have Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Smith Warner, Representative Kenny Geiler coming forward for the first panel. Ladies, thank you very much for being here. Whoever was going to be our key, and I assume it's going to be our senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from Senate District 17 and a family physician, which is one of the reasons that I'm excited to be one of the co-chief sponsors of this bill. Family medicine is all about prevention, and that's what this bill is about. It's not about prohibiting gun ownership or limiting gun ownership. It's simply about keeping guns out of the hands of children who are often the victim of unintentional injury or death from misuse of firearms that are left unsecured. The simple facts about Senate Bill 945 are this. The entire goal of it is to make sure that adults are responsible gun owners, which is to say that if you have a firearm in the house, you keep it secured in a way that children don't have access to it, period. No new sentence. It's as simple as that. And we know that nationwide, every year, there are tragedies where children find an unsecured firearm in a bedside drawer or a closet, and that gun is loaded, and the amount of pull you need to put on the trigger of many guns is capable, a three-year-old is capable of doing it. And in fact, we saw a recent tragedy in Idaho late last year, where a two-year-old reached into his mother's handbag and pulled the trigger of her handgun, and the mother died. And those are the kinds of things that we're trying to prevent. We need to be sure that when adults own guns, that they keep them in a way that children can't have access to them. And it's very simple. It basically just says, be responsible. This does not say that you can't take your child shooting as long as you're with them and you're supervising their use. That's completely reasonable. It also makes it clear that if you're 16 or older and have a hunting permit, because those hunting permits for minors require that you take gun safety classes, then you can use a gun unsupervised as well for the purposes of hunting, because we know that hunting is important in our state. So we want to make sure that that's protected, and a protected right for younger people. So we know studies clearly proved that safe storage reduces unintentional injury and death, and we want to prevent the tragedies that come from firearms being left unsecured. You will get a submission that will have a lot of details, a lot of studies. I'm not going to go through every one of those. I just want to make this crystal clear. We are not against gun ownership. We are not against children being taught how to use firearms safely. That's not the issue. We're all about safe storage and adults being responsible gun owners and protecting children who don't know how to handle firearms safely. It's as simple as that, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to let my colleagues add on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Prezansky, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I'm the state representative from House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I'm here today, I'm honored to be here today with my colleague Senator Steiner Hayward, as well as Representative Kenny Geyer, to speak in support of Senate Bill 945, the Child Access Prevention Bill, as both a legislator and a mother. You know, as a parent, I spend a lot of time worrying about keeping my kids safe. And as they've grown older and I send them out into the world, I want to do what I can to keep them safe even when I'm not there to watch over them. Now, every family has the right to make their own decision about whether they want to have guns in their home and how to educate their children about firearm safety. And I believe they should have that right. And I also believe that every responsible gun owner would agree that it's important to prevent children from gaining unintended access to firearms. In fact, polling shows that most people in Oregon, including gun owners, believe that we already have such a law. But we don't. And let me repeat that. Oregon state law currently has no provision that requires firearm owners to prevent children from gaining access to firearms. Senate Bill 945 would address that by creating clear expectations that adults safely store their weapon when a minor can reasonably be expected to be in their home. I think this is a good common sense idea. And another important thing about that Senate Bill 945 would do is it would require gun dealers to post notices about that obligation, the obligation of gun owners to keep guns out of the hands of kids. And to me, that has been one of the driving reasons for my support of this, because the way that you need to educate people to know what their responsibilities are, and the fact that this would both create this requirement and publicize it widely is why I am here in strong support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Prezansky and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer, House District 46, parts of Northeast and Southeast Portland, here in support of Senate Bill 945. With a master's in public health and a career devoted to public health issues, I'm excited to have the opportunity to talk with you today about an issue close to my heart that I've been working on for years. Guns, like many other products in our societies, have a legitimate purpose. But when they end up in the wrong hands, they become a danger to our community. From December 2012 to December 2013, at least 100 children were killed in unintentional shootings, almost two each week. About two-thirds of these unintended deaths, 65%, took place in a home or vehicle that belonged to the victim's family, most often with guns that were not secured. Just since we were last debating this issue in the 2013 session, there have been several notable cases in Oregon where we've lost children to unintentional gun violence. Like for many other products, such as prescription drugs, toxic chemicals, or cars, we should adopt effective laws that reduce the danger of accidental or unintended harm, like the addition of safety belts, airbags, or other improvements to motor vehicles. It is up to us as public leaders to set the expectations and legal parameters for responsible use of a legal product. There is no more obvious place to start the conversation about responsible gun ownership than ensuring that weapons don't end up in the hands of children. A few minor statistics. I know there's a lot in the record. One study found that in 12 states where such laws had been in effect for at least 1 year, unintentional firearm deaths fell by 23% from 1990 to 94 among children under 15 years of age. A 2004 study evaluating the association between child access prevention laws and suicides among youth found that such laws were associated with an 8.3% decrease in suicides among 14 to 17-year-olds. And I know Senator Gelser has worked very hard on an issue that, unfortunately, Oregon is among the highest in suicide rate among adolescents. A 2005 study found that the practice of keeping firearms locked, unloaded, and storing ammunition in a locked location separate from firearms serve as a protective measure to reduce youth suicide and unintentional injury in homes with children and teenagers where guns are stored. Senate Bill 945 takes the sensible step already adopted in 27 other states and the District of Columbia to require safe storage in a home when a child could be present. It's easy to comply with these steps by purchasing a gun safe or trigger lock. These safety devices are effective. Modern designs allow for quick access in case of home invasion or other threat to personal safety. As you will hear from other speakers today, the evidence shows these measures do reduce gun violence and protect children, as well as adults who may be accidentally shot by minors. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 945.
Thank you all very much. Let's see if there's any questions. Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our next panel will include Robert Uli, Paul Kemp, and Tom O'Connor.
Paul Kemp is ill today.
Okay.
Chairman Przanski, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Robert Uhl. I live in Portland, Oregon. I have been here to talk with you about the need to close loopholes in the background check system earlier this year. But I'm here today to talk about a matter or an issue that is very, very personal to me, and that is safe storage and responsible gun ownership. Preventing the sale of guns to criminals and dangerous people is a critical part of preventing gun violence. We all know that. But just as important, it is just as important that we expect gun owners to responsibly store weapons so that it cannot fall into the wrong hands. I know because my wife, Cindy, was taken from me after a gun was left unlocked in a closet where a visitor gained easy access to it. I believe that every household should be required to lock up your weapons. It is what I was taught growing up in rural Washington, and it's a principle I have practiced as a gun owner myself. But the question before you today is much simpler than that. It is, should gun owners be required to lock up their gun when a child could gain easy access to it? I was also taught that a child needs training and supervision to learn to handle a gun. I can remember being begging to be able to shoot the gun from my brothers. Please, guys, let me shoot the gun too, but too young to do it, thank God. No child, whether in his or her own home or a friend's home, should be able to get unintended access to a gun. Sadly, there are irresponsible gun owners who are reckless with guns. Senate Bill 945 sets clear requirements for safe storage that will make Oregon children safer from gun violence. And please join me in supporting Bill 945. We're not talking about huge safes and stuff to keep guns safe. Certainly that is a good idea. Certainly wouldn't want somebody to come in your home and steal your guns. I understand that people want guns to have protection against intruders and stuff. You only need one gun for that. The rest of your guns should be locked up, securely locked up. Simple locks like this will prevent a child from getting access to a gun. Simple. Simple thing. It's cheap. But it keeps children out of the guns. Okay? It's an easy thing to do. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Tom?
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom O'Connor. I'm retired and live in Clackamas County. I'm just here to add my support for this piece of legislation just wanted to say that this legislation is really simple for any gun owner to comply with. As Robert says, there's a huge number of devices out on the market to secure your firearms. I'll include with my written testimony a couple of pages from Cabela's, from Dick's Sporting Goods, that have a wide variety of safes, ranging from the kind that require a combination or a key to some of the ones that require that have a like one I have that has a simple four-digit access code that you just punch in real quickly and that opens the safe. There's as Robert said, if you have a kid around the house, I still think the best way to do it is have a safe, but regardless, there are simple devices right up there on the market. This is a trigger lock, costs $9.99 at Dick's, real simple to use, key does the trick. I wouldn't use it around a teenager necessarily, but for a child, works fine. So I just think this is a simple thing that all gun owners can comply with, and I'd like to support the bill.
All right, thank you. Questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next panel is going to include, I believe it's Dr. Ann Santa and Cheryl, is it Love? Lurie? Good morning. Who'd ever like to go first, if you'll just give us your name? And make sure the microphone, if you could bring the microphone down. There you go. Thank you.
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. My name is Ann Santa, and I'm a clinical psychologist. I've spent 20 years as a school psychologist in elementary schools and 15 years in private practice. I'm testifying in favor of Senate Bill 945. Sadly, I've seen too many young children and families dealing with the burden of anxiety and grief created by the violence in our communities. One example is a 7-year-old girl who came to see me the week after her brother shot himself. He was 13 years old. He was terribly behind in his schoolwork. He was acting up. He spent the night out without telling his parents where he was. He got back home, found out that none of his work was something the school would accept if he tried to make it up, and he shot himself. So I saw his sister for grief and trauma. She returned to therapy years later, having never recovered from this tragedy. If this young teen had not had access to guns, I believe he would have lived to work through his problems. His family would have supported him and looked for solutions. 90% of people who have lived through a suicide attempt do not go on to die of suicide. But if you have access to a gun, it's often fatal. Our children deserve our protection. Adults should be accountable, each one of us, to properly store firearms. This failure of responsibility endangers our kids and is preventable. That's the whole issue here. We know that children love to play with guns. If they don't have a play gun, they will make one. They'll use a banana, they'll use Legos, but if there is a real gun in the house, they will try to find it. Children often, young children don't know that guns are lethal. In one 2006 study, 73% of children under the age of 10 living in homes with guns reported knowing the location of their parents' firearms. 36% admitted that they had handled these weapons. So oftentimes parents think that they've done a good job of concealing or putting them away, but children love to find this out because guns are a sign of power. It's something their parents use and value. Child access prevention laws ensure that gun owners make the right choice before tragedy strikes. We've all heard things in the news about a 4-year-old accidentally shooting himself in the hand in Gresham, a 5-year-old boy in Medford shot in the abdomen when his sister tried to get the gun away from him. Many years ago, it was not standard practice for people to wear seatbelts. Now it's the law, and it has saved thousands of lives. Too many children, too many families have suffered from the horrific loss of a child. This is loss like no other. As a child psychologist and a mother, I implore you to look at the facts and statistics and pass a solution to a problem that's preventable.
Thank you. Go ahead.
For the record, Chair Przanski and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Lovery. I live in Salem. I'm the director of Crisis Management Institute. And so for the last 35 years, I've responded to school crises, including a dozen shootings, most recently Marysville, Washington. When I'm called in to help with the recovery of a school shooting, I am meeting with parents in despair who say, I sent my child off to school this morning, and he's never coming home. 80% of the weapons that are used in mass casualty school shootings and suicides were brought from home or from the home of a relative. In the case of the 12 school shootings to which I've responded, all of those weapons came from home. Gun safes and trigger locks need to take the place of the blind trust that we often have in our kids. So I'm imploring you not to wait for the next tragedy, but to look at passing Senate Bill 945. It will make not only Oregon's homes, but also our schools safer. 14 months ago in Bend, a high school student walked into a midday class with a long gun, got down on one knee, put it to his chin, and pulled the trigger. The resulting trauma for the children in that classroom, for the youth in that classroom, consumed 50% of four school counselors' time and 80% of the school psychologist's time for the entire remainder of the year, from October until June. I responded to the shooting at Thurston High School, where Kip Kinkle killed his parents the night before. They were teachers. They were solid and wonderful people. And then he took this weapon from home and walked into the cafeteria and shot 26 students. One of the things that research tells us very clearly is that students who are the most at risk of doing a school shooting are not bad kids from bad homes. They're distraught students with access to a weapon. If we have another school shooting in Oregon, the parents of those that die in that shooting deserve to have the opportunity to come and ask you, who are sitting on this committee, when you had the opportunity, what did you do to protect my child? In fact, if they don't come on their own, I'm likely to want to bring them. And I'm hoping that what you'll say is that you passed Senate Bill 945. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Ladies, thank you very much. Our next panel is going to include Roberta Rubles, Penny Okamada, I always mess that up, and Jake Wagler. Good morning. Whoever would like to start.
I'm Roberta. Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Roberta Robles. I'm a resident of Northeast Portland, a small business owner and mother of two. I enjoy target shooting at firing ranges with friends and grew up hunting and eating venison and elk on the Oregon coast. I am a pretty good shot. Today I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 945 with the goal of protecting children from access to gun. I'm here today because on Thanksgiving Day 2012, my perspective on guns in the home changed forever. Our multifamily Thanksgiving celebration occurs each year here in Salem, not far from the Capitol, with several families coming from across Oregon. The most contentious part of our Thanksgiving dinner used to be the fight over who makes the best cranberry sauce. But on that day in 2012, everything changed. My 18-month-old son was having his diaper changed on the floor next to his grandmother's bed. The next thing we knew, he had his hands on a loaded handgun stored under the bed. An 18-month-old who could barely walk, holding a loaded gun, is the worst nightmare you could imagine. Fortunately, no tragedy occurred. However, my rage was immediate and overwhelming and directed solely at my family member who left a gun unlocked and loaded in a house full of more than half a dozen young cousins and neighbor children. Really, rage is not a strong enough word to describe the feeling a mother has when her child is that close to death. This accident tore my family apart for some time, but today we have established clear rules in our homes for gun storage and have come back together stronger and safer. A gun safe community needs to be the law of the land. In the event that a child gets access to a gun, regardless as to whether an injury occurred, and fortunately no injury occurred in our house, there should be repercussions. Passing Senate Bill 945 sets the ground rules for gun safety in Oregon and is another step towards safer homes and communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Jake Weigler. I'm with the Oregon Alliance for Gun Safety. The Alliance represents over 50 organizations across Oregon committed to passing common sense legislation that will slow the epidemic of gun violence in Oregon. The Alliance works closely with partners from across the nation, including Sandy Hook Promise, an organization led by family members whose loved ones were killed in the tragic mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Today I'll be reading a statement from Mark Barton, who lost his son Daniel in that shooting. Mark wanted to be here today, but was unable to because of a scheduling conflict. On December 14, 2012, my son Daniel was killed in his first grade classroom at Sandy Hook Elementary School. In one unimaginable moment, the love and light of a sweet little boy who held the door open for adults, rescued worms from the driveway, and made friends with kids who sat alone was taken from our family and the world forever. Every day since my beautiful son Daniel was killed has been a difficult journey, and truthfully, the days do not get any easier. It is impossible for me to explain to you what it feels like to have your baby taken from you and know that this was someone else's decision. Unlike what's happening in my family, you have the opportunity to prevent another family from living this indescribable pain. In September 2013, I started my work with the nonprofit organization Sandy Hook Promise because the best way I can find to honor my Daniel is to help protect other children from gun violence. As the advocate director for Sandy Hook Promise, I hear stories every single day of lives taken in senseless tragedies, the most senseless of all being preventable accidents involving children. Just a few days ago, a one-year-old in Cleveland was killed when another child picked up an unattended firearm. He was the 24th child killed by an accidental shooting in 2015. We can't allow this to keep happening. We know that children are dying because firearms are left unsecured in the homes. Right here in Oregon, an estimated 26,000 children live in a home with an unsecured gun, and countless more visits or play in those homes. We know that someone who has unintentionally injures or kills a friend and loved one has to live with the horrors for the rest of his or her life. The lasting impact of these tragic deaths is widespread and is measurable. These deaths and injuries are preventable. Senate Bill 945 is simply about protecting children, which all parents want to do. It makes clear that it is the gun owner's responsibility to make sure your children or children that visit your home won't find your firearm or have a horrible accident with it. You have the full written statement. I will close with the end of it. I understand that Senate Bill 945 won't completely stop all gun violence, but it will help. It will save lives by keeping firearms out of the hands of children. In the days following the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary, my son James exclaimed, "I just hope no other family has to ever go through with this." When you vote for Senate Bill 945, you are literally saving children's lives. Thank you.
Chair Przanski, members of the Judiciary Committee, my name is Penny Okamoto. I'm the Executive Director of CCI Oregon. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony today. On February 29th, 2000, 6-year-old Kyla Rollin was shot to death by her first grade classmate in the Flint, Michigan school. The boy who shot her to death found his uncle's unsecured gun at the home shared by the boy's family and uncle. At the time of Kyla's death, she was the youngest victim of a school shooting in the United States. Kyla's death is particularly significant to me because it was a shooting that made me begin to look at gun violence in the United States and led me on the journey to being here today. I'm here today in honor of Kyla Rollin and the thousands of others who have suffered needlessly from the gun violence that is plaguing our country. While most gun owners are responsible with their firearms, some gun owners fail to follow basic safety rules. For example, if your firearm is not on your person, it should be unloaded and stored in a gun safe. If your firearm is on your person, it should be kept under your control at all times. Children should not be allowed unsupervised access to guns. These common sense basic safety rules can and do help reduce firearm deaths, but some gun owners make faulty assumptions. For example, some gun owners assume that their young children will never be able to find the guns hidden in their home. Or they assume that teenagers know how to handle firearms and would never handle a gun in an irresponsible way. Some parents wrongly assume that their teenage children could never be suicidal. These tragic assumptions lead to injuries and deaths that are completely avoidable. Some people will question whether a grieving parent should be prosecuted when a child injures or kills himself or herself with a parent's gun. Perhaps those people believe the injury or death of a child is enough punishment. But what about the families and the children who are not related to the gun owners? What about the families of those terrorized in the Reynolds High School shooting or the Thurston High School shooting or the thousands of other children who were visiting homes of gun owners when they were unintentionally shot by their friends or playmates? What do you say to the parents whose children went out to a play date and never came home again? 15 years ago, if the gun used to kill Kyla Rowland had been secured, she would not have been shot on that horrible day. In the years since her death, many other states have enacted child access prevention laws in order to educate their citizens about safe storage of firearms. As a matter of fact, 28 states and the District of Columbia have child access prevention laws currently. It's time for Oregon to do the same. Let's educate our citizens about gun violence prevention and the safe storage of weapons. And let's hold gun owners accountable when they allow children access to guns unsupervised and without permission. Ceasefire Oregon strongly urges you to support Senate Bill 945. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
The last panel I have scheduled, at least have signed up at this point, is Kevin Sterick. Kevin, come on up. And John Lloyd Schart, I believe.
Scart.
Sir, why don't you go ahead and come on up, too. And while they're coming up, is there any other individuals who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 945? All right. Mr. Scart, I see that you have something underneath your beard. I'm just wondering if you have hearing impaired, if you can
nope.
hear. Just recording?
Yes.
Okay. Here, I just want to make sure you could hear all the transit information that's going forward. Kevin, do you want to start off?
Sure. For the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. You know, it's interesting that the sponsors of 945 are horrified by the tiny number of accidents and crimes committed by minors who get possession of firearms. When the fact is that while any misuse of a firearm is one too many, there are far more accidents and deaths caused by plenty of other things. And while swimming pools are amongst the worst offenders, we won't even get into how many minors die driving their parents' cars. But the incidence of deaths by overdoses is really staggering. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, drug overdoses were the leading cause of injury death in 2013. Among people 25 to 64 years old, drug overdoses caused more deaths than motor vehicle crashes. Of the 43,982 overdose deaths in 2013, over half of them were from prescription drugs, a vastly larger number of deaths than caused by minors' access to firearms. What about the countless number of people who die every year as a result of errors made by doctors, a number infinitely greater than the number of people hurt or injured as a result of minors getting guns? Why is no one addressing this? And why is the bill limited to minors? Shouldn't gun owners be punished if they allow an adult to gain access to their gun, especially an adult with psychological problems? Surely a person like that is every bit as dangerous. We should point out that the shooter in the Clackamas Town Center shooting was not a minor. He was 22 years old. The shooter in the Sandy Hook case murdered his mother. His mother provided the guns from him while for years denying him mental health treatment. This kid lived in the basement with the windows blacked out, playing deadly video games, and was provided guns by his mother. Clearly, these are not people who are going to be affected by this. It's particularly ironic that you're considering a bill that would require that guns be locked up to keep them out of the hands of dangerous or incompetent people so soon after passing legislation that would make you a criminal if you did that on somebody else's behalf. There are already remedies, both criminal and civil, for a person who negligently allows another person to acquire a firearm which is used to hurt someone. This bill does not address the fact that many people who should not have access to guns because of their mental state are adults, and it ignores far more commonly available dangerous items. Multnomah County Commissioner Deborah Cafori stated and submitted testimony to you, "We protect our children from car accidents, from tobacco and nicotine, and as lawmakers, it is our responsibility to protect them from the rampant gun violence that continues to increase in this country." Put aside the fact that it's not increasing in this country, this statement would ring far less hollow if she called for the imprisonment of adults who allowed their children to smoke or get keys to their cars. I would suggest that adding the words prescription drugs everywhere the word firearms appears in this bill, then you might actually achieve something beyond the further demonization of gun owners. Thank you.
Thank you. John?
My name is John Lloyd Scarf, and I'm a resident of this city, although I was born and raised in Pendleton. my parents, when I was looking at this bill, trying to figure out who would this apply to. And my parents, when I was a child of 6 years old, there was a 270, a 22 rifle, and a shotgun in the house. And I knew exactly where they were, and I knew where the ammo was. I also knew where the keys to the car were. But I never went for the ammo. But I did go out into the front of the house and turn the key on the car and made it jump backwards. And it could have gone into traffic. It didn't. This bill says, and at a very important spot where it says that if you have and you allow your children to have this, then that's one of your defenses. Sort of negates the whole rest of the law, as far as I can see, for all the purposes that everyone was talking about. Then there's the fact that you want to take away someone's right to self-defense for 5 years. And that is a right. It's not a privilege. I'm trying to figure out how you can do that without a referendum of the people. You know, if this is such a good law, then it should be apparent to every citizen that it's a great law. And it might pass. I don't see a problem with that. But I do have a problem with A, taking away people's rights, and B, this law is really not going to take you where you want it to go. It's not going to stop anybody from committing suicide. It just won't. There's he just named off a few other ways that you can commit suicide. None of them is less messy than this. None of them is harder than this, than pulling a trigger on yourself. And you're not going to stop someone who is intent on suicide, whether they're 14 or 18 or 48, by locking up a gun, because they're going to figure out a way to defeat the lock. And that includes these $10 trigger locks. Now, for a 14-year-old, wonderful challenge but if I'm intent on shooting myself, not going to stop me. Nor is any lock in the house going to stop me. Because if I'm not there, they're not going to have it. And I have an adult son who is a schizophrenic. And I knew he had problems when he was a teenager. And there were issues. But there was no fascination with a weapon as a particular one. I don't recommend you have a weapon in your house if you know that your child is a schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. But the real deal here is you're taking away a right without the will of the people. And it's not a privilege, not a privilege like driving a car. It's a right. Like whether or not you can print up your own opinion on something. There's no First Amendment right that says, well, if you let someone get a hold of your printer and they print out something soliciting others to engage in murder, like some black guy in Portland, like happened long ago, and I supervised as a correctional officer one of those people who ended up killing the black guy. And I also know that one of the reasons they say that this happened was because some guy in California told him to go and shoot black guys. I can see that you're confused to see how this applies. But the real deal here is if then we decide that you can regulate the firearm in this way, then we need to say you can regulate the press in the same way. It's exactly the same thing. It's a privilege, no. It's a right, yes. So I don't, and then there's the fact that of all of this, I'm misunderstanding the law. Isn't creating a danger to a minor already a crime? That's the question. Is it?
You've given us your testimony. We're taking your testimony.
Okay. So you're not going to answer that question. All right. I only had two questions. One had to do with the rights issue. Mm-hmm. One had to do with the and in there that really nullifies quite a bit. Do you understand which one that is? Okay. And right. My testimony's over.
All right. Hang on. Thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward. We have a couple other individuals who have asked to give testimony. I believe it's Ray Bridges and Tracy Hensley. If you two would be so kind to come forward. As y'all come forward, let me ask again, because these are the last two that have now signed up. Is there anyone else who will want to testify on this bill? Roger, are you coming up? Okay. Thank you all very much for being here. Who would like to start off?
Hi. Chair Brzezinski and committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. Yeah. I noticed in reading the bill, you know, that twice it mentions if a petition is denied, then the information is entered into the criminal history files. That seems a little ludicrous to me. I don't quite understand that. But let me give a personal scenario that I thought of as I was driving down here today. And that was, I lived out in the country between Hillsborough and Newburgh. Okay, I'm 10 to 15 minutes from any police.
Right, we need you to put your name on
record. I'm sorry, I didn't say my name, did I?
We're going to get it now.
Kay Bridges, I'm from Portland, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself.
I apologize, I had Ray written down.
Kay Bridges.
Thank you.
78 years old. In fact, there's people in this room that tried to recruit me because they thought I was be for more gun control. I'm not. I'm for controlling criminals, not guns. Those who use guns in a criminal act are the ones that should be controlled. Okay, so let's take the little personal scenario I thought of on the way down here, because I was 10 to 15 minutes away from any police where I lived. Fairly isolated. Now, if my grandchild, who was trained on a weapon, who was a minor, was at my home, and maybe that grandchild is inside watching television or something, I'm outside in my garden. We had 36 acres up there. And I could have been anywhere on that property. And what if some lunatic with a gun came by and threatened me with that child inside, not knowing what's going on, and maybe shot me? Okay? Now, under this law, if that grandchild knew where my gun was in the house, with his parents not present, are you going to accuse my child of a criminal act because he's not present to give permission to that grandchild to defend me? I don't think this is right. Now, worst scenario, I'm in a coma, and or I'm dead, worst scenario. And the grandchild is also shot. So are you going to go after my child because he had access to a gun? Third scenario, the gun's locked up safely, and he can't get to it, and we're all dead. This law is got real problems the way it's constructed. Again, all I can say is We must go back to controlling the criminals that use a gun and use the wonderful organization that you have here in the Capitol in constructing a bill like this to make it much more difficult for criminals who use a gun in an act to repeat their offense. I thought of even other scenarios, but I think those three are the most important. The only surviving person would be my child, who is someplace else, when my minor grandchild, who's trained in using a gun. You know, it used to be an honor when I was in high school in Newburgh, when the kids who were minors were able to bring their parents' gun without parental supervision to the marksmanship class. We thought that was a big deal. We need to go back to that bill, I think, that, and sorry, I really don't know what its status is right now, that says we need to have marksmanship back in our high schools. We need to be training people who don't understand this. I was at a meeting where they wanted more gun control in downtown Portland, and I said, you all should take a concealed carry class because you're so afraid of guns. And when you are educated, you will understand things a little better. We don't need to do that. I'm sorry. I think education is important. And the closed mind attitude of someone who just wants to control a gun instead of the person that's using the gun in a crime is a highly emotional reaction instead of a logical action. I appreciate your time, committee and Chair Prozanski. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Prozanski, members of the committee. My name is Tracy Hensley from Canby, Oregon. And for the sake of transparency, I am elected official, but I'm not here on the behalf of my board. I'm here as a citizen. I actually didn't intend to testify today, but I heard some things that I wanted to share some thoughts. One early testimony mentioned the tragic event in the grocery store where the child had reached into a purse and shot the child's mother accidentally. This bill will do nothing to fix that situation. The young people who did the school shootings, as we've already heard, already committed a crime by stealing the weapon in the first place. The owner of the weapon should not be liable for a crime committed against them. I am the mother of two and grandmother of two by a stepchild. My two are here today, 10 and 14 years old, and they're asking me questions about this bill that doesn't even make sense to the 10-year-old, why this would be a law. I take pride in the fact that I have educated my children around firearms. They know all the safety rules. They know how to handle them if they have them in their hands, and they know not to touch one if there's no adult present. To have someone come in my home and take my firearm and have me be liable for such a thing, I don't think that that is the right way to go about it. I think the way to go about it is, if you really want to punish someone, punish the parent of the child who stole the firearm, because they aren't doing their job. The other point I wanted to make is, I find it interesting that we have all these health professionals here trying to protect our children by way of controlling our firearms when they don't want to talk about the real issue, and that is, you know, in most of these situations we're talking about mental health. And I think it's shameful that we're spending this much time trying to infringe on our rights and not trying to address the real problem. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Roger. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer, here representing the National Rifle Association. You have written testimony. It was submitted yesterday, so I'm not going to read that to you. You can read it for yourselves. I'll just point out some things. Firearm accidents among minors are rare. Amongst leading causes of accidental death in children, firearms are below poisoning, suffocation, prescription drugs, falls. So it's... You know, it's not one of the top causes. There's already remedy in current law. Oregon ORS 163-195 provides Class A misdemeanor penalties for persons who recklessly engage in conduct that creates substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person. It's wrong to single out firearms only. If you're going to look at this, you should include all of these causes of accidental deaths. And finally, education, you've heard over and over again, is the key. And in fact, in 1999, this body passed a bill that was vetoed by then-Governor Kitzhaber to require mandate the use of the Eddie Eagle program in schools. That in itself would have gone a long way to solve this problem. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. I guess then you have my written testimony. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Questions? All right. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I had one question. Kay? I did have one question because you did bring up something that I thought was interesting about the CHL class. On the CHL classes?
You know, you're in the silhouette, and I read lips really well.
Okay. So.
So if you can speak up a little bit, it would help me.
I just had one question for you, because you mentioned the when you were in Portland at that hearing or whatever it was, and you suggested that people should go to and take a CHL class. Are you familiar with the ones that are offered over the Internet?
Well.
I'm just wondering if you're
talking about purchases over the Internet?
No, ma'am. You'd said in your testimony you talked about you thought that everyone should be exposed to gun safety by going through a CHL class, a concealed weapons license holder permit. Do you remember?
Just with classes over the Internet, you're saying?
Well, what I was going to ask is I know that those classes are available over the Internet, and I'm just wondering if you think those classes over the Internet or as good as a live instructor?
Well, that's not really a subject of this bill, really, but...
Yeah, well, you brought it up.
I took the class, mm-hmm. and I feel that the in-person mm-hmm. with an instructor is a much better scenario.
Yeah. No,
I am not familiar with actually how they teach it online,
right.
So I really couldn't address that without the knowledge of it.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that's the biggest issue, is that if we don't have knowledge, we shouldn't be judging it. And if we do have knowledge, and those people that are for gun control all need to go and take a CHL class.
Yeah, I took a CHL class, and I thought by having a live instructor walk me through everything was much better than going on the Internet and just hearing someone talk. But thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I do not have anyone else that has asked to testify.
Oh. Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Briefly. And this is not directed at any person, but it's come up a lot over the course of the last couple of weeks, the issue of mental health. And I absolutely agree we need to do a lot more around mental health in the state. It's a significant crisis. Somebody mentioned, our youth suicide rate is increasing. But it's important to remember that mental health itself is not the driver of gun violence, and people that experience mental illness are much more likely to be the victims of a crime than to perpetrate a crime. So for people on all sides of this conversation, I think it's really important that we're not demonizing or stigmatizing people that experience mental illness, particularly those that are reaching out to get support and treatment to be healthy in the same way they would for a diabetes or any other illness. But just for the record, wanted to reemphasize, a person with a mental illness is much more likely to be the victim of a crime than to commit one.
All right. Thank you very much. So that's all I had that signed up late for Senate Bill 945. We have some extra time, so I'd want to make certain. Sir, come on up. And anyone else who wants a... Oh, here we go. Okay. Just want to make sure we have more time today than we thought we were going to have.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. For the record, my name is James Barta. I'm the legislative director for Children First, where we are working to make Oregon the very best place to be a kid. And we strive to make change by advocating for policies and programs that keep children healthy and safe. And this bill, I think, will do its part to allow more children to be safe. We regulate the right to free speech in limited ways in the same way we should think about regulating the right to guns. Now, in Oregon in the last 10 years, and I know this has been discussed a little bit, but in the last 10 years, there's been 66 suicides in Oregon of minors by use of firearms. This is almost half of the suicides by minors in the state. The other, it's about 45%. The other 45% was by hanging, which, you know, these are unfortunate topics. But by restricting the use of firearms, we're going to restrict the possibility of these youth suicides. And so I think it's important to consider this. And, you know, we're talking about 66 lives in the last 10 years. And in the most recent year, there was 15 suicides by minors by use of firearms. And so these are the children that we're talking about. And I just wanted to point these facts out and urge your support for this bill. And I thank you for the time and the attention that you all are giving it.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Lorna Walker. As I was looking at this bill, I see it as a real challenge and a real problem to solve equitably because of the diverse circumstances of families and of scenarios that have to be dealt with. As an educator, to say the least, it's alarming for a student to bring a weapon into the classroom because one rarely has full knowledge of the background of the training of the student with that weapon, whether it's a knife or a gun or whatever. And so one has to act in order to provide for the safety of all. As a child, I was trained by my father how to handle and care for and be respectful of the impact of the use of weapons. As a very young child, they were in our home, and there was never any violation of safety or respect in that regard. Not all families have the opportunity for proper training of the children in the handling of weapons and respect for choice of use. And so when we have scenarios where those who are, as the former speaker spoke, uneducated and not trained in the use, care, and handling of weapons, this really becomes a very serious challenge. If I had a child who went into a home where weapons were freely laying about, and I did not have prior knowledge of that, and my child was left playing with another child and there was a mishap, I would, of course, be terribly, terribly disturbed and damaged. And I think that because there are so many factors that are out of the realm of the control, there needs to be great care in how this is resolved, because it is important to preserve rights as well as safety. And I don't see easy solutions for it, and I admire you for being able and willing to engage in doing this. I don't know. I would think that it would be really crucial to have training on weapons to be individualized, direct training rather than internet version, because there are so many details that are involved in the training of handling weapons that are brought home in a more specific way when you're on site on task rather than trying to do something online per se. And not to take your time unnecessarily, but the many aspects involved with this, I think they have to be dealt with so very cautiously, and I do admire you for being willing to handle this.
Ms. Walker, thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Thank you all very much for coming forward. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 945. Work session for Senate Bill 945 will be carried over to Monday, April 20th. And we're going to go ahead and open up work sessions now on Senate Bill 173. And Jeff?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 173 comes to us from Senator Boquist. The bill authorizes a person who is licensed with a concealed carry permit to present their valid concealed carry license to a peace officer in lieu of presenting their firearm for inspection. The bill has no amendments and is ready to move.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 173 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And I think that one's Brian's, right? Yeah. So we'll give this to Senator Boquist to be the carrier on 173. And that will close that. And then for these votes, Senator Burdick is excused on the votes based on prior appointment. And we're going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 315.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 315 comes to us from the interim committee. It states that a person engaged in the business of selling a used firearm may either use a manual or electronic transfer register, provides that the register must be approved by the Department of State Police, and mandates that the electronic register be provided in hard copy to a federal agency within 24 hours of the request. We do have proposed Dash 2 amendments before us that state that notwithstanding the felon in possession of firearm laws or the authority of a city to regulate the purchase of used firearms, the ordinance described in the bill may be adopted and implemented by the governing body of a city or a county. It is ready to move today with no additional amendments to the Dash 2.
Mr. Chairman, move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 315.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 315. Discussion. Senator Thatcher.
I wish we could just get rid of this duplicative sort of regulation, but this helps the business out and gives up an option. But I'm also concerned about hacking. It's one of those privacy things, hacking.
Oh,
you know,
hacking.
So worrying about the privacy, those records. I hope that that's taken into consideration by the businesses that do utilize this form of recording these transactions.
Yeah. So. I think, just for the record, I believe the businesses will still have the ability, if they choose to do manual, it doesn't require them
exactly.
to electronic.
I said, but if they do choose, but, I hope
yeah,
they do
no,
take
yeah,
precautions.
I just want to make sure the record's there, and I agree
absolutely.
With you. We hope that whoever's using these type of systems for transporting that type of data, or really any type of personal data, is actually having a system that is, let's say, as hack-proof as possible in the sense of having security as you can. I mean,
which
the reality.
Which is impossible, but still.
Yeah, but, you know, we do some due diligence as to does not have an open system. I agree with you. Any other comments?
Well, and then, and then also a concern about if something should happen to that record, I don't know what happens to the proprietors if something should happen to their hard drive or whatever. I'm not sure if they get some sort of punishment. But anyway, I guess I would just make sure that they would make sure they have a backup or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think, though, once they file with the agency that they're required to, I don't know about retaining or storing the documents, but just like if you had manual copies and unfortunately had a fire, but, I mean, things happen.
But then again, this is a duplication of something else they're having to do anyway.
Okay.
So never mind on that. So I guess they're probably good to go.
All right. So we've had our comments and discussion. Any objection to the motion that's before us? Not seeing any. So moved as to the dash twos.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 315 as amended by the dash two amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 315 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 315 to the floor. We'll close the work session on 315. Open a work session on Senate Bill 385.
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, Senate Bill 385 also comes to us from the interim committee. The bill adds justice and municipal courts to the definition of court facility where firearms and other weapons are prohibited absent specific circumstances. The bill amends language concerning prohibited knives to include pocket knives and authorizes municipal and justice court judges to establish procedures regulating the possession of firearms and other weapons in court facilities. We do have two amendments that we're ready to move on. The first are the proposed dash one amendments that state in a shared court facility the order, policy, or procedure of the presiding court judge takes precedence over that of a municipal court judge or the justice of the peace. There is no fiscal impact on the proposed dash ones. The proposed dash four amendments expand the definition of local court facility to include justice court, municipal court, or probate court. They state that the conviction under the section is a Class C felony and clarify that the court may only prohibit weapons in the area where the court conducts business and during hours the court operates. There is a minimal fiscal impact on the dash four amendments.
All right. Senator Cruz?
Just a question, Mr. Chair. The one issue we had was on, especially on muni courts that are shared facilities, that it only applies when it's a court facility and not when it's, and we are covered in that.
The dash four amendments take care of that exact scenario.
I read that. I just wanted it on the record. So with that, Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 385.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 385. Any discussion besides what we've had? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendment to Senate Bill 385.
Senator Cruz now moves the dash four amendment into Senate Bill 385. Discussion?
This is the one that covered the concerns that many had.
Yeah.
And actually,
this is the one that actually narrows down as to the time and place in operations. So if it's a facility that's used for multi-purposes, it's only when the court would be actually in session, not just because that's the location of the court, but while they're actually in session.
That's correct. And I believe it mirrors amendments that were submitted by yourself, Senator Thatcher, as well.
Okay. Yep. Okay, so any more discussion on the dash fours? Any objection to the dash fours? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 385 as it's amended by the dash one and dash four amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 385 as amended by the dash ones and the dash fours to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
The only thing I have to say is I think this just kind of, I guess, clarifies current law. There must have been confusion. Otherwise, I guess this wouldn't have been brought forward, but I think judges already had the ability to do this exact thing, but I guess we're just clarifying it.
Yeah, there were some concerns as to, depending on the court, who actually had the authority, if they actually had the authority. Some people would say inherent power gave them that. This will codify and ensure that they do have that authority with the limitations that are placed there from the dash ones and dash fours.
Yep.
Any other comments? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. Anyone want to carry the bill?
I would suggest that Senator Thatcher carry it, just put on the record what it doesn't do.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Yeah,
sure.
If you're fine with doing that, I mean, I'll carry it, but I thought that maybe there might. Okay, Senator Thatcher will be the carrier on Senate Bill 385. And we'll back you up if you need to. So we'll close the work session there. And at this point,
did we carry 409 over?
We did, and we're going to do it again. So basically what we have left on the agenda from today, as I just mentioned previously, we're carrying over the work session on Senate Bill 945. We're also, as we said earlier this in the hearing, it's carried over Senate Bill 409. So those two bills, work sessions, will be carried over until next Monday, April 20th. I think that takes care of everything. Tomorrow, we're going to be starting, I believe, at 8:30. 8:30 is what I understand, I think, when we were in. That's right. So it may say 8 o'clock, but expect that we're going to update that. So that's what I believe. If we are not, we'll make certain that you know it's still on for 8, but I think the workload we have, we should be able to do everything at 8:30. With that, we're adjourned.